listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey guys, we've got a good show for you today. We're going to chat all about SEMA and CES and how coronavirus keeps taking its toll on the events we have coming up. And we'll get into new Ford F-150 pricing. But before we get started, a word from our friends at Meguiar's. You know, car waxes have come a long way. And last year, Meguiar's introduced their hybrid ceramic spray wax. Its advanced SiO2 hybrid technology delivers the ceramic wax with protection and durability. There's no rubbing, curing, or buffing. It provides extreme water beading action as well. And this year, Meguiar's launched their liquid version. It seals the paint for long-lasting protection against the elements. It's easy to use and applies like a traditional liquid wax. Another product that they have, which I love, is their hybrid ceramic spray detailer. This removes contaminants like dust, fingerprints, bird droppings, and it helps to boost gloss and enhances protection. It's ceramic made easy by Meguiar's. It's available pretty much any auto parts store or Walmart, wherever. So guys, check that out. Hey, it's welcome to CarCast. It's Matt, the moderator, DeAndre, with Bill Goldberg. How you doing?
Good, buddy boy. How you doing?
I like that intro. That was the that's the demon.
That's the demon.
That's
yeah.
The demon.
We're gonna
demon.
Have to change it soon to a turbocharged.
Turbocharged. The intro is gonna be.
Exactly.
It's just gonna make that sound.
Bam!
Yeah.
Explosion.
Anyway, if you guys are just catching up on shows, pick up last week's show with Dave Salvaggio from Speedcore. That was fun. We got a nice little lesson on carbon fiber, and I'm sure as you're listening to this, there is still their Speedcore carbon fiber demon up on Bring a Trailer. Last I checked, it was $100,000. It's a stock powertrain demon, doesn't really need any more power. And they did their full carbon fiber body treatment on it. I believe it's one of five demons that they did. It's pretty badass. I'm sure it'll be pretty collectible. These guys do great work. So that's kind of cool. That's up there. And I've been now that I'm sure I'm bugging Dave a little bit, but I'm like, hey, man.
Here we go. God almighty.
What are you guys doing with that Mustang convertible over there with the Roush supercharger? And I said, you guys want to sell it? Here's what I'm thinking if you guys want to do something. And he's like, yeah, I got your email and your voicemail and your text. I'll ask around and see. So I'm going to peer pressure him into maybe selling me that car. I don't know, which means I'm going to sell the BMW M5. You know, I told you guys, we got it dialed in. You know the reasons why. You know, it's still low miles. Somebody else can enjoy it.
It's a great car, man. Pass it off and let somebody else start a new relationship with it. I mean, I think your relationship with it, it's time for you to separate.
Yeah. First of all, there isn't any more I could do to it anyway. Like, I pretty much done. I mean, you could drive it, and sure, I've done that. But there aren't any other modifications I would ever do to that car. That car is done. Between the big brakes, Brembo brakes, HRE wheels, it's got all the good stuff on it. It's got the KW suspension. You and I were just talking a minute ago about KW. I got the Phase 3 or Stage 3 or however they designate their suspension on it as well. So it's fully adjustable. It's a badass car. I would like to get it over to the dyno just so I could give you guys a real rear wheel horsepower number before I post it, before I put it up anywhere online or whatever. You know, it'll probably go up on Bring a Trailer. I'll reach out to them. If they like the car and they choose it, then we'll sell it there. You know, in the meantime, I don't know. If you guys are interested, keep a lookout for it or hit me up. I'm not locked into any particular thing. Somebody hits me with the right number, you get the car. I don't need to put it on Bring a Trailer. I think I could, but, you know, that's the way it works.
Here's a question, though.
Yeah.
And it's a real time case study.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Is the enjoyment in building a car the build itself or the end result? Because when you're done with it, what do you fill your time with then? Just driving it? Or you got to build something else.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I mean, I've got plenty of those projects, so I'm not worried about that. Actually, here's the thing is I do like driving the BMW. And the reason why I'm selling it is because in my mind, I wanted to keep it low miles. And I had a number in my head. I had 30,000 miles, no more than 30,000 miles in my head. And I'm at like 25.9 or 26 or something like that. So I'm like right there. And it's a little frustrating for me to see the car and not drive it, you know, and I could drive it a little bit here and there.
And you're doing that because you don't want to surpass 30,000?
Yeah.
Well, how long do you think that would take you as infrequently as you drive that car?
Well, that's what I'm saying is because I do kind of like to drive it now, I can take it out and put 300 or 400 miles out on a weekend or even a single drive. Like it's set up so good now, and the clutch is lighter and the new ACT clutch that I could carve the canyons and hit up, you know, the Santa Monica Mountains, Malibu Canyon, stuff like that. And I want to be able to do that, but I want to be able to pass this car down to somebody else that will enjoy it, and I wanted to do that with less than 30,000 miles. Now, obviously, it's worth more with fewer miles on it. So this ultimately is a win-win. Like, I could sit on the car for a few years and it goes up in value, or I can get a fair price for it now, and then somebody else can drive it, not drive it, do whatever they want with it, and I could focus on the next projects. But you're right, though. But when I picked it up from my friend David, he was working on it for me, got the cooling issues and stuff worked out. Driving that thing home was a blast. Like, it just has power for days. I mean, I don't know. You could be doing 65, 70 on the freeway. You bring it down one gear and hammer down, it just pulls, man. That thing just keeps pulling. It's a high winding RPM engine anyway, for the most part, and it goes. We had a digital gauge hooked up to give us the boost on it, but when you tune the computer, I guess the gauge doesn't really work. It's meant for stock ECUs. Now you could swap out the gauge for an analog boost gauge. It's still a digital gauge, but it uses a boost line. It uses just a tube and it goes to the manifold. So you can convert it to that. So I don't know how much boost, but I think just based off of the configuration it was before, probably somewhere in the 13 to 16 PSI range, probably about 14, 15 pounds of boost on that thing. And the supercharger, you guys know, is new. It has the other one. The oil line was wrong, so it kind of seized up, and I put a new, you know, work with Vortec, put their new TI supercharger, which is an upgraded version of what I had before. So it has, and the inlet tube that David made is gorgeous. Completely, he basically just made it from scratch, but it's the equivalent of a mandrel bent tube. He just did it with pie cuts and welds, and it's steel, so it doesn't collapse. The other one had a big dent in it because it was sort of a flex tube. It's beautiful. It's smooth. The air going into the supercharger, there's no kinks or anything in it. And then the supercharger itself is an upgraded, more powerful unit. So even at the same amount of boost, I would say it's putting down horsepower. I think we put down about 410 at the tires on this little car before we made the changes.
And what's it weigh?
That's a good question. We'll find out. Let me hit this Dodge ad. Hey, Chris, could you find out what an E46 BMW M3 weighs? While he does that, it's a 2001 M3. It's time for Dodge Power Dollars. That means for each horsepower, you get $10 off your purchase on Dodge Charger, Challenger, and Durango. So come in for Dodge Power Dollars today for a pretty sweet deal.
All right, I see it. The curb weight is 3,415 pounds.
Yeah, so 3,400 pounds is light in this day and age, right? I mean,
yeah.
You know, the Mustangs and the Camaros and the Dodges, we're anywhere from, I don't know, 3,900 to 4,500 pounds. So,
I
want to say my 93 Cobra, the weight from the factory was about 3250, 3255, something like that. Lightweight five-speed transmission and stuff. And then, you know, when you do all of the modifications on it, if you think about it, you do, you know, like on my car, I did a six-speed conversion, and the T56 weighs more, but it's in the middle of the car and it's as low as it can get, right? And then the brakes and the 18-inch wheels are heavier, but the rotor is a two-piece rotor with a lightweight aluminum, you know, hat, and you know, but the caliper is bigger. So, you know, how much weight are you adding? And then your cutting weight, like you take out the stock stamped steel K-member for the front suspension, and then you put in a tubular K-member, and it cuts, I don't know, 30 or 40 pounds off the front end, but you added big brakes and a heavier transmission and more wheel and tire. So that's going to be one of the it's going to be kind of one of the things where I'm not just about on that car specifically. I kept the original engine, you know, obviously highly modified, but the original engine is an iron block and the heads are iron heads. It's got the original GT40 3-bar heads. They're all fully ported and stuff like that. But so I know the nose is going to be heavy like it was before, but can I start to shift the weight around? Let's say the Cobra jumps from 3250 to 3,500 pounds. It's where am I carrying that weight? You know, when we corner balance it, we're going to see where that goes. The now the truck, on the other hand, the Lightning, I have been thinking about
it.
It is different because we know that carries all the weight in the front, right? And nothing in the back. So for this truck specifically, I wanted to try to shift some of that weight. It doesn't have to be all original. I'm going to pop that whole engine out. And as you guys know, I'm going to an aluminum dart block, aluminum heads. So that should cut about 100 pounds off the front end. And then the suspension that's on there, that twin I-beam deal that's on there, when I went to the DJM suspension, the stock pieces were significantly heavier. And, you know, I got a bigger brakes and I got bigger wheels, but I put them on the back as well, big brakes and big wheels. And I moved the batteries to the back. So not only did I take 40 pounds of battery off the front of the truck, I moved it to the back under the bumper and I added a second battery and I got them just in line. It's still 12 volts. I didn't increase the voltage. All I did was just add another 40 pounds to the back just to get a little bit of extra weight for traction. I don't know that much is going to make any difference in the world, but I did take 40 pounds off the front and put 80 pounds in the back. And then my last conversation, of course, with Salvaggio at Speedcore was, hey, can we do the carbon fiber bumper off the front and the hood? Yeah, so the bumper is a big, heavy steel piece. It's actually pretty big. And he said that's a pretty easy job in their world. You know, in our world, maybe not. But he, you know, he can just, yeah. He said, well, that one's easier than a hood for sure, right? Because of the structure and the bolts and all that stuff. He can just take the bumper and just kind of lay it up, do the carbon fiber, and come back with a piece that's, I don't know, instead of a 30-pound bumper, maybe it's a 10-pound bumper. There was a lot of reducing weight in the front, moving some weight to the back, and the transmission that I'm putting in there is what was the GM transmission? The 4L80E, but it's going to have a gear drive. A gear vendor's overdrive unit on the back. Now, it's not that big, it's not that heavy, but it goes onto the back of the transmission, and you figure where that is, that's a little bit under the front of the bed. So I'm moving weight more toward the back of the vehicle. So I think the truck weighs 4,500 pounds, and I'll have to look up the specs on the front to rear weight difference. But I'm curious to see when this is done. Are we at 4,500 pounds? I'm fine with that, but where is the 4,500 pounds? If it was,
I will volunteer to sit my fat ass in the back in the bed when you do autocross.
You might have to. We're going to have to strap you in there. It's funny, but when I had it on the dyno over at Banks, they take a forklift and they have a 1,000-pound sandbag on a pallet, and they just drop it in the back of all the trucks because they test the trucks all the time and they need a lot of traction for that dyno. And it's really tough to strap down the truck, especially if you're making really big horsepower or shit tons of torque. So they just drop the, you know, it takes 5 minutes. They just grab the forklift, lift the pallet, drop it in the back of the truck and to hold it down. So I don't know. Listen, if I was getting 65% of the weight on the front of this truck, and I don't know what it is, we'd have to look it up. If I can get it down to 60 or 57, that's a win in my book. I think you're going to feel
make
that.
A huge
yeah.
difference. Yeah.
It's going to make a huge difference. But anyway, so you and I were talking about events a minute ago, CES, SEMA, you know, rules are constantly changing. We keep saying, hey, will it happen? Will it not happen? Who knows what's going on? I can tell you that I think I just got something in my inbox saying that IndyCar, which is going to run Laguna Seca in September, is not going to happen, which is interesting because they are running other places and they are running without spectators and they're making it happen. But California is such a pain in the ass. And so indecisive on rules and this and that, and you know, politics aside, they're basically saying we're not going to run Indy in September. probably at this point, less of a health issue and more of a politics. It's a political issue because for them to throw in the towel this far in advance is them just going, nobody wants to work with us. Nobody wants to try to make this happen. So we're not going to put in the effort. Meanwhile, here we are, less than 4 weeks out from Indy 500. And they still want that to happen because everyone's trying to make some version of it happen. And if you can do it and wear your masks and be safe and cleaning stations and fewer capacity, if, you know, some people would like to go. By the way, we're not forcing anybody to go. So if you don't want to go, watch it on TV. If you want to go, then you can go. But that still seems to happen. But some of the big events in our industry is, one, first of all, CES, which is coming up in January. CES in our world has become a huge important event for the automotive space. Cars are being debuted there. A lot of technology in cars are being debuted there. And it's becoming an important piece of the automotive industry, especially as auto shows, traditional auto shows are dying off. By the way, they were dying off before coronavirus, you know. So CES has said they're going to do a virtual show. And the reason why they hit the announcement early is because they're challenging all of the exhibitors to come up with something. This isn't going
to
be.
I think that's the right way to go about it.
Yeah. They're saying, hey, we're going to do a virtual show. We don't have to force it. We don't have to force people in the room. They're still going to sell tickets to the event. And I guess it's all going to be done on the CES website. And it, when I say virtual show, it doesn't mean they're going to fill out the convention center and just have camera guys rolling around. It's these car companies are going to be able to do their own presentations. Like we saw the Bronco debut, and we saw what was the other one that we watched? The Ford F-150 debut. And, you know, they had sort of a scripted stage and they filmed it and there was two people on stage and they were, you know, 10 feet apart. It was Dennis Leary on one side and the VP of Ford on the other side. But it was all filmed and presented. So that's what CES, how I understand it at least, that's how what CES is saying is, hey, exhibitors, come up with your virtual presentation. and they'll make it part of the program. So I'm okay with that. You know, listen, it's always difficult to get out to CES anyway because of the timing and the holidays and the other shows that are going on. In our world, we always had SEMA, and then there was PRI for a bunch of people, and then holidays, Christmas, and then January, I get out to the Arizona Auction Week at the end of January, Bear Jackson, RM, Gooding, you know, as all of those things were happening on a regular basis, it was tough to fit CES in there. So I don't mind a virtual version of it. Maybe there's a little less business going on, you know. Of course, you know, SEMA is a topic of ours as well, so we should talk about that. SEMA is still, keep in mind, a trade show. And there's a lot of business that has to happen, a lot of international business that has to happen. If SEMA was a virtual show, would there be as much business happening? Probably not. But do we need a SEMA show? You know, I'm
probably not.
Listen,
I'd say they need to make the decision like ASAP, just like CES did. I don't know. I'm torn. You know, I really am. In speaking to Richard Waiters from Magnaflow about it yesterday, and getting some behind the scenes knowledge, I don't know, man. I don't know what the right decision is. This day and age, I mean, look at how Ford did the Bronco presentation. Yeah. I'd say that was a success.
I thought their F-150 presentation was very good as well.
You know, so why can't these entities take a page from Ford and come up with something during these circumstances that'll blow people away because they have 6-7 months to prep for it now. I don't know. There's, it's just a new normal, man. I mean, we're seeing what in real time, I mean, it's like a reality show in real time.
Yeah.
Some companies are taking one route and others are taking the other. Who's foreseeing the future correctly? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think it's in times like this, it could be an advantageous time to set a new normal as far as advertising is concerned.
Yeah.
So it's an opportunity, but at the same time, I mean, we're missing out. I mean, hell, everybody, the SEMA convention, I mean, you know how it is.
Yeah. Listen, nobody's
take
a bigger
the business out of it.
Nobody's a bigger fan of that event than I am. I love it. That's my Disneyland. I enjoy the event. I love catching up with everybody and talking with the companies I don't normally get to see. But also, I'm just a super fan of aftermarket parts. I walk up down.
But also, like you said in the past, SEMA is based a lot on relationships.
Yes.
Right? And so how are we going to get that part of it satiated virtually? Not going to happen, period.
Yeah.
So it's just a weird circumstance how this is going to go on. I just wish they'd make a decision and go with it.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure there's politics and money and incentives and all kinds of things that are involved with a decision like this, not just safety. Safety is a high priority, but the question is if they do a SEMA show, how much business is going to happen? Who's not going to show up? What exhibitors won't be there, and which buyers won't be there, and which limited media, right?
And throughout the past number of years, we've seen a couple major manufacturers back out.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm very curious as to see the ripple effect of what's going on right now.
If a virtual SEMA means less business happening, you have to compare that to an actual SEMA under our current conditions. How much business is going to happen anyway, right? So maybe why run the risk? You know,
definitely why run the risk?
Why run
the
risk?
Make the damn decision and go with it, and capitalize on the opportunity in these times. You know,
I would agree. I would agree with you and say this. The one thing I think SEMA might be overlooking is the event is going to come up quicker than you think, because here we are rolling into August. And if you keep waiting And then they decide on a virtual version like CES is going to do. All of the companies, the exhibitors, won't have as much time to start preparing what their virtual version is going to look like. You can't give them 30 days. You know, listen, our friends at Holly Performance Group, they own, I don't know, 30 different companies now, and they have thousands and thousands of new products. They don't have to present them all, but I would imagine those guys would say, hey, we want to take maybe a couple hundred of our key products and put them together in some sort of video presentation. Don't give them 3 weeks to do that. You know what I'm saying? Like, be fair to those guys, especially if they're going to make the investment and a production company and filming and hosting and setting it up and pulling the products out and how it's going to work. Like, so much is invested in the booths and the staff and how they're, you know, the marketing materials and the presentation of all the products at SEMA. I don't know, maybe these guys, you know, just take one of their warehouses and build their SEMA booth in the warehouse and just have their guys walk around and go, hey, here's welcome to my SEMA booth. I'm going to walk you through all of the products right now. If it's an hour-long presentation to walk me through the Holly booth, I'd watch that video.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, sure, we're going to get stuck with a bunch of questions about the products, you know, but that's why being at the live show is important. But it's fine. There can be a version of that. There can be a question and answer. There could be submit your questions. It could be email. It could be whatever. Like, it's just there's a way to make this happen. And we can go back to doing SEMA the way it was next year, hopefully, you know. But I don't know. At this point, I'm saying don't force it. You don't have to force it.
How many builders are quietly sitting in their corner in their shop going, oh, God, please cancel SEMA. I don't want to go through taking 4 years off of my life building another car again on this gun.
Yeah, look, the guys that debut cars, there's a great video presentation debut that you can do. Team up with your sponsors. Get it done. It's not going to take anything away from what you guys are doing. I know there's a lot of prestige and that good feeling about launching your car at SEMA. But again, why take the risk? We're all going to see it anyway. And the truth is, a lot more people are seeing, you know, the videos and stuff online than they are anything else. And I would say, I can't speak for everybody in the media world, but if you guys send me videos and tell me about parts you're debuting and cars you're debuing, I'm going to talk about it over here. And we're going to put it up on social media. We're going to support it and talk about it. We're not going to just
surely in the time when people are dying for content, I'm going to watch it. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm going to kill to get to my screen to watch that. No question.
All right. Well, let me tell you guys about Geico. Right now, Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies. And that's 15% on top of the money Geico could already be saving you. So what are you waiting for? You could be saving money as well. There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more. That's geico.com. I wanted to give you guys a little bit of a heads up on some of the – we talked a lot about Ford F-150. So Ford F-150, the new version, which, you know, I haven't seen it in person, but the presentation was good as we talked about. It looks cool. Hybrid version and onboard generators and some cool options. The news is out that the 2021 F-150 will have a base price of $30,635. So for $31,000, it gets you into the base version of this, which is good. And then by comparison, a F-150 limited two-wheel drive Super Crew is $72,500. I think it's about $3,500 to make it all-wheel drive, to make it four-wheel drive. So, you know, $72,000 for the two-wheel drive limited Super Crew, $75,000 for the four-wheel drive. I don't know what it's $2,500 for the hybrid powertrain. So I guess if you went with like a pretty well equipped limited, which has a lot of standard options on it, all wheel drive, four wheel drive, Super Crew, hybrid, EcoBoost, you're about $78,500. I don't know. I just kind of feel like it's a lot of money, but also we kind of knew, you know, yeah, we knew all these trucks were going to be creeping up. I don't know that these numbers are that much more than the previous year. I think the base model at $30,600 is like, I don't know, $100, $150 more than the base model from, you know, the previous generation, the current generation. But if you looked at over the last 10 years, then there's a big jump in price, right? There's a big jump in price. And obviously, you know, you can't compare the limited at $75,000 to the, you know, to whatever my Lightning from 25 years ago, you know, cause that thing was, I don't know, $22,000. But, you know, that, I guess that's what it is. So that's where you're going to be. You're 30,000 on the low end. You're probably 75,000, 78,000 on the high end. I would imagine you could probably even load it up with a few more things and
you'll be in the 80s right quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of the other prices here, starting prices for the 2021 F-150 Lariat Super Cab is about $1,900 more than it was last year. It's $46,890. So let's call it $47,000 for the Lariat. The King Ranch is $58,000, and the Platinum is about $61,000. And as we said, the Limited, which is the top of the top of the box, is you know, $78,000 for the hybrid all-wheel, four-wheel drive.
It's hard to even say that.
Yeah, but you know, it's a big commitment. Listen, I'm driving right now a car called the Polestar. We haven't talked too much about Polestar yet. It's popped up at Monterey a car week a few times. Polestar is sort of a spin-off brand from Volvo. It's meant to be a high-end luxury electric hybrid. And I believe they're specifically calling it electric hybrid as opposed to a traditional just a hybrid, because a lot of the hybrid vehicles that we have get about a 30 mile or so range on just electric power. Like if you think of plug-in hybrids, not Prius hybrid, right? Like my mom's RAV4 hybrid, it's not a plug-in hybrid. She just drives it and gets, I don't know, 35, 40 miles per gallon. It switches from gas to electric, does everything on its own. Then there's a plug-in hybrid. I drove a Volvo S90 T8 hybrid, this sedan, this past week, full-size sedan. It's gorgeous, plenty of room in the back, very comfortable. And it's a plug-in hybrid, which means I could fill it up with gas and drive it around. Also, there's an outlet in the front. You can plug it in. At night, you get about 30 miles of range. And you could drive it in an electric mode, or if you know, it also kick on the gas engine when it needs it to charge it or to give it more power, or depending on how you drive it. But in theory, you could putt around town in electric mode and get about 30 miles of range. It worked well. It was pretty seamless. And on the touchscreen, the infotainment system, you could click charge. So if you don't want to plug it in, and you're going on a road trip, and you're going to be, you know, sitting in the car for a while anyway, you can have the gas engine charge the battery, so it's fine. So the Polestar has a similar setup, but with more power on board. So it gets about none of the numbers are final, but I think the website says about 60 miles range, so double the range on the electric only version of it. When I got in it, it was roughly 70 miles, so I think they're dialing it in. It has the same twin charged engine as the Volvo, the 2-liter supercharged turbocharged, but now combined with electric motors, it'll do all wheel drive, and it's over 600 horsepower. Combined, it's 619 horsepower. And again, they're finalizing that number. I think the website says 600 and the press release says 619. They're figuring it out. I drove it here. I just picked it up. It's a short loan. It's a prototype car. They're not for sale yet. They're doing some pre-orders, and it's not meant to be a high-volume car yet. And I'll explain to you why. It is, first of all, it's very pretty. This is a two-door coupe, like a full-size coupe. You know, imagine like, I don't know, I don't think it's like M4 size. I think it's a little bigger than M4 size, maybe like M6-ish size. I'd have to run the numbers on it, but it just feels a little roomier. So it's pretty nice. The entire body is carbon fiber. And it is gorgeous. First of all, I'm a fan of the Volvo design recently. You know, the Volvos, they all look pretty good. You know, the SUVs, the sedans, they all look pretty good. The XC60 is a little squattier, you know, compact version of the SUV. I think the bigger one has better proportions. But the lights and everything look very, very good on it. So with Polestar doing a carbon fiber body, they were able to refine it even more. Because if you think about it, we had this discussion when I spoke to the exterior designer of the Ford GT. He told me something about that car as well. He said, hey, you see how the door comes down and then it kicks out 90 degrees where the sill is, and it kicks down 90 degrees where, you know, where the rocker panel is. He said, we can't do that with a steel or aluminum body because those sharp turns thin out the metal. Hey, Gage.
Matt says hello, Gage.
It thins out the metal too much, but with carbon fiber, they are able to mold it in a way that you can get those angles that you wouldn't normally get. So the Polestar, which is gorgeous, has a very sharp edge, almost a knife edge, like a blade going up along the fender on the front and the rear of the fender. It's a beautiful sharp edge that they're only able to do in carbon fiber because it would thin out the metal too much. Also, it cut 500 pounds off of the
That's
car
substantial.
Had they done it in a steel body. And that allows them you know, we talked about the look, but also the reduced weight certainly helps them load it up with the batteries and the powertrain and range and all the things. Now, because Polestar is new and it's more of an exercise for the future of this company than anything else, it's $150,000.
And we expected it to be.
Yes. Now, this is why they don't expect to sell 10,000 models. And initially, the first few years, it'll probably, I don't know, I forgot what their prediction was, a couple of thousand, maybe 2,000, maybe 500 a year for the first few years. The issue with it is this, is although I like the Volvo styling, when you get in the car, it's basically Volvo interior. It has, you know, their nice steering wheel and nice leather, but the infotainment system, everything is exactly the same. Even some of the exterior styling, the lights and everything are all exactly the same. You can see how it's an evolution of Volvo's brand. If Volvo said, hey, we can do a carbon fiber body, so we get nice, good, hard edges and sharp lines, and we can do a kind of a holds no bar, powertrain system, hybrid system. So they were able to do all of that with Polestar. But the Volvo is really nice for $60,000. And you're like, well, do you want to make the jump to $150,000 for these increment improvements? I would say you'd have to be a real early adopter in technology to want this, because although the styling is good and the Volvo interior and all that is good, you can get it in a Volvo for 60 grand or 50 grand or 68 grand or whatever. So it's not a huge departure in that sense. But there are early adopters out there. You know, at one point we were spending $20,000, not me, but somebody, on, I don't know, flat screen TVs, right? Like, you know, and now, you know, and now it's a lot, right? People spend 10. Listen, Adam has very famously said that one of the largest flat screens that came out was years ago. And I don't know, it was like almost $100,000 for like a 100-inch flat screen TV or 90-inch flat screen TV. And Jimmy Kimmel bought one for like $85,000.
I can get one for 10.
Yeah. And now you walk into Costco and for, you know, for $7,900, you get an 85-inch flat screen. Yeah, sure, maybe he's got the only one that's 100-inch, but you know, there's a big difference between 85 grand and 8,500. So, yes. Listen, he loves it and it works for him and he makes plenty of money, but you got to be sort of that early adopter, right? I mean, and in some level, a lot of us are. We buy $1,000 iPhones when this one used now is, you know, one third of the price. So, anyway, yes, that's that. What's going on. You let me know, Bill, when you're running out of time.
Yeah, I gotta go.
All right, you're gonna go. I'm gonna hit this this Dodge ad. I'm gonna wrap up on some Rivian news, and then we're gonna call it a day over here. But Bill, thanks so much. I know you've got an appointment to run to, and so go ahead and do that, and we'll chat next week. All right, so summertime is the best time to join the Brotherhood of Muscle because Dodge Power Dollars means you get a guaranteed discount. The math is simple. You get $10 off based on the total horsepower of your new Dodge vehicle. That's every 2020 Challenger, Durango, Charger, anyone out there, any one of these that are out there. You get the most out of your horsepower this summer. With $10 off for each horsepower, that means you can jump into a Dodge Charger SRT Scat Pack. It's got 485 horsepower, so you get $4,850 off. And this summer, Dodge Power Dollars is back with the Dodge Durango as well. Whether you're behind the wheel of a Durango, you're behind the wheel of a performance-driven SUV. And whether you're rolling out with friends or family, you'll be able to fit everyone in the Durango because it's got 7-passenger seating capacity. It really works. And you heard the announcement we made a few weeks ago. Ooh, the Durango Hellcat. Oof, big horsepower in that thing. So get more power. You get more off. It's that simple. Hurry into your local Dodge dealer now to take advantage of Dodge Power Dollars. We talked about the Ford F-150. We talked about the hybrid version, the pricing on it. And then, you know, another a truck that I'm a fan of from what I've seen so far is Rivian. It's the all-electric pickup. They got huge investments from Ford, huge investments from Amazon. Amazon wants Rivian to make delivery trucks, and they're putting in a long-term order for 100,000 electric delivery trucks, which is a huge commitment. I love that. I love that idea, by the way, is you invest hundreds of millions of dollars into the electric company that makes the trucks, and then you buy a bunch of products from them. Eventually, essentially fueling their own sales, almost guaranteeing their success. It's a great strategy. But the electric pickup truck will start shipping in June of 2021. It's a little delayed because of obvious reasons, coronavirus. There's factories have to be shut down or limited capacity, and supplies are running thin because you can't get companies to make anything. As a matter of fact, I heard that one of the big shortages we're going to be running into is cans. So all of the beverage companies, beer companies, soda companies, they're having an issue getting cans made because even the ones that own their own factories are having issues getting cans made. So everything is suffering in some weird effect. But June of 21, Rivian electric pickup trucks should start shipping, and then the SUV should come out a few months after that. All right, before we wrap it up, just also want to mention that you know, our friend Dan Edmonds used to be at Edmonds.com, and I think he's with Autoblog now and maybe doing a few other things. I've always liked Dan's deep dive into the suspension. He takes a lot of the trucks and puts them up on the ramp and goes in and explains it. He's very, very knowledgeable about that stuff. I always love having a nerdy conversation with him. And I couldn't end the show without mentioning, although he does a lot of trucks and SUVs, Dan just did a deep dive into the Shelby GT500 suspension. The new GT500, the carbon fiber wheels, the magnetic ride. It's at Autoblog. Go to Autoblog, look it up for the GT500 suspension deep dive. And he goes through some fantastic details of what Ford has been doing there. The brakes, the rotors, the control arms, you know, the way the steering is, the carbon fiber wheels. He breaks down some of the weights of these things and what the wheels weigh and, you know, the coating on the inside of the wheel to protect the carbon fiber from heat, from the brakes. Like, it's really, really, really cool stuff. So, Dan, I always appreciate your stuff doing that. I'm a huge fan. You know that. And I read everything on that article. It seemed like it was pages long, but I just kept getting into it going, what? I like that. I like that. Very, very good stuff. So check out Dan Edmonds' deep dive suspension, deep dive on the Shelby GT500. All right. We're going to wrap things up now. And then, you know, more stuff coming next week. And then later this week, of course, Adam and I are back in the studio talking more CarCast stuff. And I believe we're going to have a guest. I think Friday we're going to have the guys from Gooding. We're going to have David Gooding.
And Hans Wuerl.
And Hans Wuerl back in from Gooding. They've got the auction coming up next week. And it's all online now, so you guys want to check that out. All right, guys, thanks for listening. Until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to CarCast. Like we said, more cool stuff coming up later this week in the studio with myself and Adam Carolla. Right now, Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies. That's 15% on top of the money Geico could already be saving you. So what are you waiting for? You could be saving money as well. There's never been a better time now to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Just visit geico.com.